after receiving instructions, or the primary instruction from Sukadev Goswami, which was that in the last days of his life, he should fill his mind, his consciousness, with thoughts of Krishna. He should focus in a very centered way upon Krishna. So Maharaj Parikshit actually did that. He focused his already pure mind purely, still concentrating it more, further, up, and faithfully upon Krishna. And as a result of that, because of his deep affection and attraction to Krishna, he lost all affection and all attraction for anything in this ephemeral, changing material world. The anchor, in other words, of his material existence was lifted from the ocean of birth and death. And he focused his mind with great devotion on Krishna. And he asked Srila Sukadev Goswami some further questions. He asked him about the creation of the material world, basically, and how the Lord, through his energies, how does he do this? Does he expand himself? Does he do everything through the agency of the modes of material nature himself? Does he expand all at once and do everything? Does he expand consecutively? Does his second expansion expand into a third, and the third into a fourth, and the fourth into a fifth? How exactly does this creation take place? It is inconceivable, actually. Even the demigods cannot understand this. These are empowered entities, very, very subtle. So much more fixed in goodness, from which knowledge arises, and ability arises, subtlety arises from the mode of goodness. Even they cannot understand the material world. But he's asking, how does Krishna do this? He doesn't accept the principle that there is a creatorless material world, that it just somehow popped into existence and there is no cause. Although there is a cause of everything in the material world itself doesn't have a cause. He doesn't accept that. He accepts Krishna as Sarva Karana Karanam, and he wants to hear about it. He wants to hear how Krishna does this. What does Sarva Karana Karanam mean? Yes, the cause of all causes. It must be there. But then someone can say, you're speaking about that everything must have a cause. Well, then what is the cause of all causes' cause? Who causes God? And Prabhupada was actually asked this question by a poet. And Prabhupada said, if you understand what God means, then you will understand that he is the one who has no cause. That is implied within the definition of God. Everything rests upon him, but he himself is swatantra. What does swatantra mean? Independent. He doesn't rest upon anything else. Janmad yasya yata. This is the very definition of the absolute truth. That which all else rests upon, and he whom nothing, that he rests upon nothing else. He is the only one who is independent. So, he asks these questions, and now, beginning in text 11, and going to the end of the, more or less to the end of the chapter, Sukadev is beginning his reply, and he doesn't just begin giving the answer. What does he do? He begins to offer obeisances first. Most of the verses, he offers his obeisances. And then, perhaps in text 18, he offers his obeisances from 11 to 18, or 12 to 18. And then in text 19, he asks, in the next three verses, 19 to 21, he asks if the Lord would be pleased with him and be merciful to him. Obeisances, I am so little, you are so great. Please be merciful to me. Please be pleased with me. And thereby, grace my words with your mercy, so I will be able to answer these questions. This is before he speaks. Text 11. Sutta Goswami, who was narrating this to the sages of Namasharanya, said, when Sukadev was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energies of the personality of Godhead, the energies that the Lord used in creation, he then systematically remembered the master of the senses, that is Rishikesh, Rishika Isha, the senses and their master, the Isha of the senses. And Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, that the master of the senses with the senses should be served. And that is how pure devotional service is defined. When we don't have an independent, self-centered use for our senses, that we use everything in the service of he who is the master of the senses. So after being requested to describe this Lord, the Lord of all the creative energies, he then systematically remembered the master of the senses, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. Now why did he do this? Now here, in Prabhupada's purport, he's giving part of the great secret of preaching, and how to be a successful preacher. This is one part of the secret, but this is a very important part, Prabhupada's purport. The devotees of the Lord, while delivering speeches and describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord, do not think that they can do anything independently. They think that they can speak only what they are induced to speak by the Supreme Lord, the master of the senses. This is just what the devotees want. They want to be controlled by the master of the senses. The master of the senses, the master of the mind. They want to be instrumental. The materialistic person, based on his false ego, he wants to be the master of the senses. Ishvaraham aham bhogi. Siddham, I am perfect, I am powerful, and I am so happy, and I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. But a devotee doesn't think like that. Let these senses be used instrumentally, not for my pleasure, because that will never make me happy, never bring me pleasure, but for the pleasure of the Lord. They think they can speak only what they're induced to speak by the Supreme Lord, the master of the senses. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord and that they can be properly used when they're employed for the service of the Lord. That's an amazing statement. The senses, body means senses, which is the biggest of the senses in the body. Well, not including the mind. Yes, the skin, the sense of touch, it's everywhere in the body. Some people have really big mouths maybe, but still the tongue is not as long, it cannot be as long as the skin is big. The sense of touch, it pervades the body, practically speaking. So all the senses should be used in Krishna's service. An amazing concept. These senses are not mine. Why aren't they ours? That means our body isn't ours. If someone says, well, certainly my body is mine, I can do with it what I want, what answer? So what happens if the person doesn't accept Bhumirapo Nalayu? Speaking to an ordinary person, what would you say? He says, well, this is mine, this is me. What are you talking about? Yes, and now it's mine. Yes, and what's the proof that we can't do what we like with it? Yes, especially our death. We have to leave it behind. Something that's really ours, that's truly in our possession, that belongs to us. It belongs to us. It is ours. We don't have to leave it behind at any time. Just like we may be sitting in this room and think, boy, this is my room, this is my chair, this is my microphone. But after an hour and a half, we get up and leave. After the semester is over, we leave it behind. We are forced to get out, whether we like it or not. Like with the body, whether we like it or not, out at a certain point. No one escapes this. Therefore, no one owns their body. And because, as Prabhu said, that this is the energy of the Lord, it is His. We may be using it for some time, but it is not ours. The property of he who it belongs to, actually belongs to, always. Sometimes it is vyakta and avyakta, manifest and unmanifest, as material substances are. But it belongs at all times to the master of the creative energies of the senses, Rishikesh. So he's offered his obeisances. Now he begins his prayers, text 12. What I'll do is read through them. Let's see, maybe we'll read some of the purports now, or we'll come back. I'll read through some of the prayers at least. Sukadeva Goswami said, before speaking, he offered prayers. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who for the creation of the material world accepts the three modes of nature. So this is what he's asking about. How is he doing this? So he's first saying that he does do this to create the material world. He is the complete whole. Just imagine. Understand this point. That he is the creator of everything, and yet he's the complete whole. He is everything because everything rests in him. But he is residing as the complete whole within the body of everyone. He is everything, yet he is within something. He is within our bodies and everyone's body. In my body, in every single person's body, and yet everything rests in him. So is this easy to understand? No, in fact, it's quite impossible to understand. And therefore, his ways are inconceivable. Achintya. Without having achintya shakti, or potency to do far more than our tiny minds can conceive of, tiny finite minds can conceive of, there's no meaning to the concept of God. So three things. He's everything, the source of everything. Yet he's within everyone. And his ways are inconceivable. So this is God. And therefore, he says, let me offer my respectful obeisances. Because we are tiny. When confronted with this kind of power, can we challenge it and say, who is God? I am God. Can we say something foolish? We are so dependent on him. So one who is sane and unpretentious, who is not pretending, who is not a bluffer, who is honest, who knows his position, he offers his obeisances to the Lord. The first three verses of his prayers are acknowledging this incredible position of the Lord. I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence. Just examine that phrase. Complete existence. Everything that is in existence rests in him, and existence itself rests in him. Therefore, he is Satchidananda Vigraha. He is the form of existence and transcendence. He is beyond everything, and yet he's a form, again inconceivable. How could everything in existence, because existence by definition is everywhere, how could everything in existence be compacted within a form which has limitations, seeming limitations? It has a beginning and an end. If it doesn't have a beginning and an end, how does it have a form? How is it defined? But yet, his form comprises all existence. And yet, he has a form, again Achintya Shakti, and is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances in atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. So he kindly acts equally towards both the devotees and the non-devotees. Someone who is a devotee in the material world, he might be in distress in some way or another. And Krishna destroys that distress by carrying that devotee to his lotus feet. And sometimes Krishna, like with Prahlad Maharaj, his lotus feet even go to the devotee. Or to Jayan Vijay, we'll hear in the third canto. Krishna walks upon his lotus feet to protect them from further cursing. By whom? The four Kumaras. He walks there on his lotus feet, even though Garuda is right there. He doesn't want to wait for Garuda. He was so concerned about the safety and welfare of his devotees. So he takes away their distress. And how also does he take away their distress? If he, by his mercy, allows a devotee to always think about him, practically if he comes within the mind of a devotee, that will take away a devotee's distress. Because Krishna, when he is there, he is there. He is actually there. Abhinatam namanamano. He is not different from his name. Prabhupada used to say, when you say the name of Krishna, he is dancing upon your tongue. He is there. The person is there. Nama namano. And also, he is kind to the atheistic demons who are just getting themselves deeper, more deeply entangled in the material world by their horrible atheistic, self-centered acts. He is kind to them by killing them and giving them another chance. And when Krishna himself kills, then they are liberated, actually. For the transcendentalists, and also a person who is atheistical, he will say that there is no God. But then Krishna appears to him in the form of death. Unavoidable. What's the words of the Bhagavad Gita? Mityu Savaharasyam Chaham. I am unavoidable death. And this death, like with Dhruva Maharaj, how did Dhruva Maharaj meet his death? What's the phrase that's used in the Bhagavatam? Quite interesting. When he was boarding the flower airplane, what did he do? He stepped upon the head of death to enter this airplane that would take him to the spiritual world. That means that he used death to step to get to the spiritual world. So for a devotee, it's a stepping stone for his eternal life. And for a non-devotee, it is the greatest terror. That's, of course, impetus to become devotees. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, transcendentalist, plural, those who are beyond matter, he grants their specific destinations. If they are Brahmavadis, if they are impersonalists, he will let them, by his mercy, go to the spiritual world. And if they are devotees, Paramhamsa devotees, he will take them, by his mercy, to his lotus feet. So there are pious devotees, and he gives them what they need. He grants them freedom from their difficulties. The atheists, he gives them what they need, and the transcendentalists of the two kinds, the Brahmavadis and the devotees, Vaishnavas, he gives them what they need as well. So this is an amazing Lord who is with everyone, in everyone's heart, we heard. Third of these verses, 14. Let me offer my respectful obeisances. And this is the last of the prayer of his prayers at this section where he's going to speak about who he's talking about, who he's going to describe, this incredibly powerful Lord. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto he who is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty. And so he is a person, he has activities, he associates with other devotees, and who is always a problem for the non-devotees, because non-devotees can't understand how God can do specific things. They either conceive of him as impersonal, or they conceive in some way or another, vaguely personal, vaguely impersonal. But when soon as you say that he has done something specific or he plays a flute, they'll say, how could God play the flute? Why doesn't he play the saxophone or the trombone or the guitar or a sitar or tabla? How could it be that he plays the flute only? That limits him. Or he likes peacock feathers upon his head. Why peacock feathers? Why not ostrich feathers? Why not crow feathers? Blackish complexion, why not purple? Why not green? Why not red? Why not this? Why not that? Dances with gopis. Why doesn't he dance with deers and frogs? Soon as you say anything specific about God, non-devotees have a problem with it. And why don't devotees have a problem with these specific things? It's because they accept his own words. They accept that only when he reveals himself, when he tells one about him, if he says, I am like this, I am like this, I am like this, I like to take care of the cows. This is what I like. Then the devotees accept this. I like to play with my friends. I like to be a member of the Yadu dynasty. Why? Because these devotees are so wonderful. I reciprocate with them. And yet I have a nature, a personality. So the devotees accept, but every single characteristic, specific characteristic of God that one will name, a non-devotee will say, no, I have a problem with that. I can't accept that. Yet, he is the supreme enjoyer of both the material and spiritual worlds. This is his position. He is the enjoyer. We are not. And yet, again, he enjoys in his own abode in the spiritual sky. There is no one equal to him because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable. What does that last sentence mean? His transcendental opulence is immeasurable. There is one prayer by Lord Brahma that he says, after Lord Brahma gets a glimpse of the opulences of Krishna, who is just a little boy wandering in the fields of Vrindavan with his cows and his friends. He gets a glimpse of the opulences of Krishna. And he says to Krishna that there is so much difference between your body and my body. And Brahma is so powerful that it is inestimable. No, I can't even understand the difference. Even though you have a body and I have a body, but your body is completely different. And I can't even estimate how great your body is. And even if one, and one can't do this, but even if one could count every atom, every single atom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Even if one had the biggest of computers and you could count every single atom in creation, if one had that ability, one would not even still be able to estimate the glories of Krishna, because they are immeasurable. The stars in the sky, we can't count. Everything in existence, mama, angso, tejas, sambhava, springing just from a little tiny part of Krishna's potency. And that little part is immeasurable for us. What to speak of Krishna and therefore Brahma? Sukadev and Brahma, and every one of us who is sane should simply offer our obeisances and pray for protection and whatever else it is that we want, because we are so tiny and he is so great. Now, I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here, and then his prayers will shift. Prabhupada's purport. There are two sides of the transcendental manifestations of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Two sides, two aspects. For the pure devotees, he is the constant companion, as in the case of his becoming one of the family members of the Yadu dynasty, or his becoming the friend of Arjuna, or is becoming the associate neighbor of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as the son of Nandi Yasoda, the friend of Sudam, Shridam, Madhumangal, or the lover of the damsels of Brajabhumi. That is part of his personal feature. And by his impersonal feature, he expands the rays of the Brahma Jyoti, which is limitless and all-pervasive. Part of this all-pervasive Brahma Jyoti, which is compared to the sun rays, is covered by the darkness of the Mahatattva. And this insignificant part is known as the material world. In this material world, there are innumerable universes like the one we can experience, And in each of them, there are hundreds and thousands of planets like the one we are inhabiting. So a frame of reference is being built up here. Because there's the spiritual world, then there's the Brahma Jyoti, and on part of that Brahma Jyoti, there's the Mahatattva, and part of that, out of the many, many universes that come from that, we are in one universe, and in that one universe, there are thousands and millions of planets, and we are in one planet. The mundanas are more or less captivated by the unlimited expanse of the rays of the Lord, but the devotees are concerned more with his personal form, from which everything is emanating. Janmadyasyataha. As the sun rays are concentrated in the sun disk, and yet, as Prabhupada once pointed out after going through one of these exercises in establishing a frame of reference, here we are in one little room, in one little continent, in one planet, on one universe, in one insignificant part of the material world, and here we think that we are the center of everything, each of us individually, due to the false ego. So that is called maya, or illusion, because it's clearly not the case. If anyone is not convinced that they are not the center of existence, all they have to do is ask the person sitting next to them if they are the center of existence. Very easy to find out. Or we can all take a vote. No, we are just so... Therefore, obeisances. Krishna is the center. As the sun rays are concentrated in the sun disk, he's the source of everything. The Brahma Jyoti is concentrated in Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost spiritual planet in the spiritual sky. The immeasurable spiritual sky is full of spiritual planets, named Vaikunthas, far beyond the material sky. The mundanas have insufficient information of even the mundane sky, so what can they think of the spiritual sky? Therefore, the mundanas are always far, far away from him. Even if in the future they're able to manufacture some machine whose speed may be accelerated to the velocity of the wind or the mind, the mundanas will still be unable to imagine reaching the planets in the spiritual sky. It can't be done. It's in a different realm of existence. But there is a way to get there, but it's not by this kind of machine. So the Lord and his residential abode will always remain a myth or a mysterious problem, but for the devotees, the Lord will always be available as an associate. So what is a devotee? How would we define a devotee? For whom the Lord is always available. What's the simplest way of defining devotee or a bhakta? Yes, one who has bhakti to Krishna or devotion to Krishna. For such a person who actually has devotion for Krishna, bhakti, such a person is always available. Krishna is always available for such a person. What does always mean? Yes, continuously. There's no time defined in the negative, vyatirek. There is no time when he is not available to such a devotee. And when he's not available to such a devotee, he is even more present in his unavailability, separation, vrahava. So he's always with his devotees. This is wonderful. And this is impetus for the devotees. The Lord will always be available as an associate. And for a non-devotee, always, whatever you say, yeah, but. Here's a reason why this couldn't be, and here's a reason why this can't be, and here's a reason why I shouldn't do this, and but, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and that can't be logically correct, and on and on and on. But the problem is lack of devotion, actually. because he can only be seen yan shama sundaram achintya guna sarupam premanjana charita bhakti valochane. So next, the mood shifts after describing this all-powerful, wonderful Lord. Now Sukadeva will say, continuing offer obeisances, but yat kirtanam, yat smaranam, yat ikshanam, everyone, yat vandaram, yat shravanam, yat arhanam, lokasya sadyo vidunoti kaumasam, tasmai subhadra shavase namo namaha. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, and worship can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. So he's so powerful. We've been hearing about how powerful he is, but here's another aspect of his power. He's so powerful that just by glorifying him, just by hearing his glories, just by remembering him, just by praying to him, worshiping him, just saying his name, he's so powerful, all the sins within the heart can be removed. That's how powerful he is. Bringing it practically from macrocosmic to microcosmic, from the big, big picture down to the individual. He's so powerful that just by remembering him, this is Sukadeva Goswami speaking. And then, let me offer my respectful obeisances again and again unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna. The highly intellectual, simply by surrendering unto his lotus feet, are relieved of all attachments to the present and future existences, and without difficulty progress towards spiritual existence. So he's so powerful, remembering him, chanting his name, worshipping him, purifies the heart. Therefore, what should we do? One should take full refuge of him. And that kind of a person who does that is highly intellectual. He is intelligent amongst men. And a person who tries to go out by his own power, considering how insignificant everyone's power is in this world, and whatever power we have, it's just a gift of him, the Supreme Lord. Such a person, no matter what he does, is unintelligent, less intelligent. Or the term that Prabhupada would use to describe such person is generally rascal. Full rascal. Avajananti mammudha manushyam tanamashita parambhavam ajanato. Without difficulty, after taking shelter of his lotus feet, they progress towards spiritual existence. 17. More obeisances. He's so powerful. Take shelter of him. Now, pious persons are described. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna again and again. Because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics, the great chanters of the Vedic hymns, and the great followers of Vedic principles, they cannot achieve any fruitful results without dedication of such great qualities to the service of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas has proved this point, that every result that one can get through charity, through even impersonalism, through being a sage, being a very pious karmi, philosopher, a mystic. The results only come by Krishna's grace, and there must be at least some bhakti within that person. There has to be at least a tinge of bhakti, even in an impersonalist. He won't get any result without bhakti being in there. So therefore, they may get there, they may develop a full identification, soham, that I am that, I am the supreme, I am everything too. They may develop that, but then they have to pray, oh Krishna, in some form or another, oh Krishna, please allow me to become that. And then they may realize something. But it is always bhakti, or Krishna's grace, that will allow some realization to come, some success, whatever it is. But these people are pious. But how about the impious? Next verse. Karata hunandra pulinda pokusha abira shumba yavana kasha daya yinye chapapa yarapashaya shaya sujanti tasmai prabhavishnave nama. He is all powerful, prabhavishnave, prabhavishnu, prabhavishnave nama. The all-powerful Lord, powerful Vishnu, to him I offer my respectful obeisances. He's so powerful that Kirata, Huna, Andra, Pulinda, Pulkasa, these are all persons outside of the Vedic culture who are not considered pious, but rather are considered sinful. And others, addicted to sinful acts, which in Kali Yuga is more or less every single person, they can be purified too. So the pious persons get purified and gain the results by through the grace of the Lord. But even the most sinful can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Due to his being the supreme power, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport. There's two sections I wanted to read. The first one's maybe a third, long purport, a third of the way. The beginning, Prabhupada defines all those different terms, the karatas, the huns, the this, the that, the abiras. And then, beginning, the above-mentioned historical names are different nations of the world. This is about one-third of the way through the purport. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible to the standard. They're all correctable. Correctable, corrigible to the standard of perfect human beings if they take shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Lord Christ, Jesus Christ and Muhammad, two powerful devotees of the Lord, have done tremendous service on behalf of the Lord on the surface of the globe. And from the version of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, it appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world situation, if the leadership of world affairs is entrusted to the devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already been started, then by the grace of the Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change of heart in human beings all over the world, because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to effect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. A long sentence that Prabhupada expresses a very deep and grave hope he had for his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If the leaders of the world would entrust power to the devotees in ISKCON, our ISKCON, yes, this organization, then Prabhupada expected the devotees to be advanced enough well situated in Krishna consciousness enough to give instructions, pure instructions that would allow the dust-covered minds of the leaders and the others in the world to become purified. So what a grave responsibility entrusted to the devotees of Prabhupada's society. What a grave, extremely grave responsibility. The politicians of the world may remain in their respective positions because the pure devotees of the Lord are not interested in political leadership or diplomatic implications. The devotees are interested only in seeing that the people in general are not misguided by political propaganda and in seeing that the valuable life of a human being is not spoiled in following a type of civilization which is ultimately doomed. If the politicians, therefore, would be guided by the good counsel of the devotees, then certainly there would be a great change in the world situation by the purifying propaganda of the devotees, as shown by Lord Chaitanya. Just imagine how the political hatreds in this world and the greed in the world that and the so many horrible things that are going on, the violence, if people would just accept and realize the simple point that we are not our body, but we are eternal souls. You may hate someone because he's a member of a different country or this or that, but that's only temporary. What is that birth compared to eternity? So if people actually understood this one point, then how they would act would really change. So the devotees are meant to propagate these points, and so much rests upon this because the current civilization is quite doomed, and obviously so, because it is based on falsity. Falsity and the propaganda is what? That if you have, that the real problem of the world is economic development. That if people were richer, had more money, then they would have better living facilities, and every house would have a television and a computer and whatever else is the current fad, and then people would be happy. But what would happen if someone next door had a better television? Then everyone would be, you know, like that. There's that famous story about there was one man who had a big fight with his neighbor, and he was so angry at his neighbor, and he hated him. So much enmity to his neighbor. So he prayed and prayed and got a benediction that whatever he would say would come true. But his neighbor prayed and he got another benediction that whatever he got, first neighbor got, he would get double. So the man looked and saw that his neighbor had a nice house. So he prayed, he said, I will have a house that's 5 stories high with 4 swimming pools. And all of a sudden he had a house that was 5 stories high and had 4 swimming pools. And he was so happy, but then he looked and saw that his neighbor's house was immediately 10 stories high and he had 8 swimming pools. So immediately he became miserable, because this is actually a fact. If one has envy in the consciousness, you can't be happy because anyone has something more than you. So he thought what to do. So he said, I want 5 cars, big cars, you know, the kind that have real stretch ones that have the blackish covered windows so no one could see in. 5 of those. And pop, he had 5 of those. But then he looked and his neighbor had 10 of them. And he was getting so frustrated. I want a big fence around my house that's 10 feet high. And then, boop, and then his neighbor had one 20 feet high. And he was feeling so much misery, and he thought, what to do? And he thought, I know. I want one of my eyes to go blind. And what happened to his neighbor? Both eyes. Now I have.
That is the nature of envy.
So no one can be happy by economic development. Why? Because the envious mentality is still in the heart. And if anyone dares to have the slightest bit more than us, or something that we don't have, it becomes intolerable as long as envy is in the heart. So economic development can never satisfy anyone. Rather, it breeds dissatisfaction. Any situation in the material world, thinking that it's going to satisfy us, is foolish. It will only make us more dissatisfied. What we need is something, a cleansing of the heart. And that's the propaganda that Prabhupada wished to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to spread all over the world. Clearly, he wanted his ISKCON as a preaching movement, following in the footsteps of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Spread this message of Mahaprabhu, cleanse the heart, kirtan everywhere. I read recently where Prabhupada, I think it was a lecture or a conversation, where he said that in temples, for example, he said when the there shouldn't be, it was in Chaitanya Charitamrita in a purport where Prabhupada said that in the temples there should be continuously, it will be successful when there is no other sound being heard except Krishna's names. Let this propaganda go all over the world. And then when Krishna's names are continuously going on in our hearts, then there will be cleansing of the heart. And then there will be satisfaction. But if there's partial chanting and partial desiring and partial service and partial selfishness and partial this and partial that, the result is partial. But when we make a sincere attempt, and all in our sincerity we can do is partially, because we're perhaps partially sincere and partially insincere, then at least we make our attempt, meager as it is, in humility. My dear Lord, kindly, I am a servant of your servant. Please accept this humble offering, even though I know what quality is. What to speak of the quantity, I know what quality. Please accept this. And if we do even that sincerely with humility, then Krishna will grab us. And either quickly or slowly, it's up to him, he will carry us towards him, as we maybe are trying to hold on and take all our material things and concepts and everything with us. Slowly or quickly, it's up to him how he wants to deal with us. And Harisha Tadanam Sunai, when he wants to really, really be kind to us, he gives us so much trouble. We have to give up everything. He pulls us so quickly. Takes away everything. Everything. And then we have a choice. He never takes that away, though. Our choice. We have a choice. Will I build up another little empire? And everyone does this. The false ego rebuilds very quickly, has an amazing ability to build up a new identity based around one's selfish self. Or there is another choice. Instead of, we may have diminished our kingdom, or maybe we can can try and make a great plot and plan to make a bigger one next time. Or we can just call out continuously Krishna's names. I don't want everything anymore. I'm finished. I've had enough. As Krishna, I want the service of your lotus feet. I want you in the center. But to preach about it is easy. But when it happens to one, it's very difficult. So Prabhupada, the purport continues closer to the end. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart, not by economic development. This is the propaganda. Purification of heart is required. Chito dharpana marjanam. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste or Vanashrama Dharma is no longer regular, even amongst the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it now possible to re-establish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. So what to do? How will one get purified? Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental progress. So by the order of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnava never accepts another Vaishnava on the basis of birthright, just as he never thinks the deity of the Lord in a temple is an idol. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Sukadeva Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord, who is all-powerful, Prabhu Vishnave Namah. As the all-powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee and devotional activities of the Archana and the deity, his form is the worshipable deity in the temple. Similarly, the body of a pure Vaishnava changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnava. The injunction of Vaishnava regulation in this connection runs as follows. Arche Vishnav Shiradiya Gurusu Naramatiya Vaishnave Jati Budhi Savishno Namni Shabda Samanya Buddhi, etc. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple, but is worshipped in the temple as an idol. Nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man. Nor should one consider a pure Vaishnava to belong to a particular caste, etc. From the Padma Purana. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all powerful, can under any and every circumstance accepts anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. That is the way of self-realization. In the final verse that we'll read today, moving onward from obeisances to this all-powerful Lord who can purify everyone, even if they have the lowest birth and the lowest tendencies and the lowest nature. because he is Prabhu Vishnavi. Prabhu, powerful Vishnu, from within the heart, he can purify each and everyone. Obeisances unto that Lord. And now, moving onward, starting to ask the Lord to be pleased with him. After offering obeisances, now, be pleased with me. He is the super soul and the supreme Lord of all self-realized souls. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures, and austerities. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva and all those who are transcendental to all pretension. Pretension means what? What? I would say that's more a symptom. What is the deep pretension? Pretend. That's like someone may walk into a place and a bank, and he's pretending that he's one of the customers, but he has a different intention. He's going to rob the bank. Pretension. He's pretending. Like Putana pretending she was a mother, but she was actually something completely different. So there is the real identity, and then there is the pretend, what is not actually real. So pretension means accepting any identity other than what we really are. And what are we really? Mahaprabhu has said what he is, Gopi Bhakta Parakamalayo, Dasa Dasa no Das, Jivera Surupoi, Krishnera Nitya Das, Mamai Vangso, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Mama Eva Angsa. Krishna says, the living entity certainly, Eva, Angsa, mine, Mama, certainly mine, my part and parcel. So anything other than this is pretension, faking, bluff, unreality. So therefore, he is worshipped by Lord Brahma, the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva, the greatest of the demigods, greater than the greatest, and all those who are transcendental to all pretension, who are not pretending anymore, who are aware of who they actually are. They worship him, every single one of them. Being so revered with awe and veneration, may that Supreme Absolute be pleased with me. That is what his desire is, and that's the desire of a devotee. And this is what he's doing before speaking, daring to speak the Bhagavatam. He's paying his obeisances to the all-powerful Lord and begging that he be pleased with him. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport. From the beginning, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, although the Lord of all followers of different paths of self-realization, is knowable only by those who are above all pretension. So this is a goal, to be free from pretension on all different levels. Everyone is searching for eternal peace or eternal life, and with an aim to this destination, everyone is either studying the Vedic scriptures or other religious scriptures, or undergoing severe austerity as empiric philosophers, as mystic yogis, or as unalloyed devotees, etc. But the Supreme Lord is perfectly realized only by the devotees because they are above all pretension. So pure devotees, that's what it means to be pure. Is to be above pretension. And if we are not above pretension, we should be humble. That we can be. We can know ourselves at least to, and be honest enough to accept that, oh, I'm so far from being a pure devotee. Oh, so let me at least be a servant of the servants of the servants of the devotee. Let me try my best to be a servant of those who are pure. Humility. When we see the faults within us, and Krishna will point them out by His grace, divine grace, then we should become humble and become humble servants. Humbler. Prabhupada continues in his purport. A living entity, by his constitutional position, cannot be devoid of all desires. The bhukti kami, mukti kami, and siddhi kami all desire something for personal satisfaction. But the nishkami devotees of the Lord desire everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. They are completely dependent on the orders of the Lord and are always ready to discharge their duty for the satisfaction of the Lord. In the beginning, Arjuna placed himself as one of those who desire self-satisfaction, for he desired not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but to make him desireless, nishkami. The Lord preached the Bhagavad Gita, in which the ways of karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga, and also bhakti yoga were explained. Because Arjuna was without any pretension, he changed his decision and satisfied the Lord by agreeing to fight. Kurishe vachanam tava. And thus, he became desireless. The examples of Brahma and Lord Shiva are specifically cited here because Brahmaji, Lord Shivaji, Srimati Lakshmiji, and the four Kumaras are leaders of the four desireless Vaishnava Sampradayas. They are all freed from all pretension. Srila Jiva Goswami interprets the word gata vyalikai as projita kaitavai, or those who are freed from all pretension, the unalloyed devotees only. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 19.149, it is said, Krishna bhakti nishkam ata eva shanta bhakti mukti siddhi kami shakali ashanta. Those who are after fruit of results for their pious activities, those who desire salvation and identification with the Supreme, and those who desire material perfections of mystic power are all restless because they want something for themselves. But the devotee is completely peaceful because he has no demand for himself and is always ready to serve the desire of the Lord. The conclusion is, therefore, that the Lord is for everyone because no one can achieve the result of his respective desires without his sanction. But as stated by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 8.9, all such results are awarded by him only, for the Lord is Adishwar, the original controller of everyone, namely the Vedantists, the great Karmakandiyas, the great religious leaders, the great performers of austerity, and all who are striving for spiritual advancement. But ultimately, he is realized by the pretensionless devotees only. Therefore, special stress is given to the devotional service of the Lord by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. If there are no pressing questions, I can read some comments by the acharyas. Yeah. But it's being more specific because the spiritual world, what's the Sanskrit? It's interesting, there are some words in here from the first verse of the Bhagavatam. But in the previous reference, he's the enjoyer of the material and spiritual worlds. Maybe it's not in the verse, maybe Prabhupada just translated it roughly. But clearly they're not different things. Without referring to the verse, there is the entire spiritual realm, and there's the material world. The entire spiritual realm includes the realm of Brahman, of the Vaikuntha planets, but the topmost realm of the spiritual world is Krishna's Swadhamne, which really means Goloka Vrindavan. So that's perhaps putting it in its, where he's really enjoying, according to his full nature as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is fully expanded there. And of course we know that he has completely manifested himself as the person in full manifestation of his nature in Golok. Just wait. Wait. One moment, please. Yes, to 18. At the end of the purport? Yes. Without any reference to a particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. You're asking what Prabhupada specifically means by that? I think the idea that Prabhupada is making here is that there is a culture, the Varnashrama culture, in which it is perfectly natural to be Krishna conscious. And Krishna consciousness just naturally grows in that culture. But if we try to establish the culture as all over the world or in any country, before people can become Krishna conscious, even though it's favorable, it will never happen. So what, because the social context and political and economics is just so different, just try to tell people, even amongst the devotees, that okay, I'm a Brahmin and you're a Vaishya or a Kshatriya and this one's a Sudra. It just doesn't work. You know, it's just too much against the culture, of, especially in the Western world or everywhere but India. It's just against everything, that the way that people have been brought up. But regardless of what the culture is, there are certain things that people can do, essential things. And those essential things should be what's emphasized. The things that are Sarup Siddhi Bhakti, the things that are directly Krishna, that will put people, spirit souls, regardless of the externals of their culture, directly in contact with Krishna. And that is basically Panchanga Bhakti. Chanting Krishna's names, associating with devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, especially those worshipping the deity, and holy place also, but especially association with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Shastra. Regardless of the country, regardless of the customs, let people dress any way they want, let people, of course, will change their eating habits and, you know, the four rules, and but the real basics are what should be emphasized for the rest of the world. And then things, as much as practical, can be built on that. But if we emphasize other things, other than chanting Krishna's names from the beginning to the end, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and associating with devotees, it won't work. And we see this, when devotees come to Vrindavan, and they go to the restaurant, what do they want to eat? They want to eat pizza and what? Lasagna and things like that. The Western devotees. Because they were born in a particular culture, you can't, it's almost impossible to change these things. So what should we do? Should we say, and in the early days, we did say that in the movement, you know, no one would ever, ever think of having what, pizza. No one would ever think of that. What to speak of ice cream or something like that. That was all these things completely. But they have a way of coming back. Your old tendencies have a way of, you know, you're pushing them down and then they just, after a while, they resurface. Okay. But chant Hare Krishna really a lot. Okay. Pizza prasad. I'm all right. seems the movement is so big. Who's going to say, stand up and say, no, and who? No one will listen. But okay, but chant Hare Krishna, hear Srimad Bhagavata, and gradually become purified deeply in the heart. Deepen your realizations. So take to the things that will deepen the realization. And if we don't do that, we may keep up the externals, but we will not be satisfied. This is my conclusion, or the conclusion that I'm hearing, that we better get purified deeply and more deeply by chanting Hare Krishna. Otherwise, and we've seen this so many times in our society, you know, devotees, you know, they do everything. They, you know, they preach, they get a position, maybe they, you know, adopt a change of dress, and they go on for many years, but something inside is not satisfied, and then they find themselves being forced to go backwards. Yes, something inside will be unsatisfied. It must be unsatisfied until we really have a deep relationship with Krishna. So we really, it's urgent to take deeply to those things in a proper way that will satisfy the soul. Because the position, the externals, will not satisfy the soul. They can't satisfy the soul any more than economic development will satisfy the soul. I mean, speaking about even in the society. So we really have to, in my opinion, but also it's backed up by everything I've read and heard, is that we really should chant Hare Krishna and really associate with Krishna through the Bhagavatam, through the Bhagavad Gita. Have nice association with the devotees. Really worship the deities. But especially the chanting and hearing in the association of devotees. Otherwise, very difficult to continue in advance. So the essence, so I think Prabhupada is making the point that the essence of the process, even though other things may be very helpful, but the essence of the process is the essence. And we have to keep always, not have to in the sense that we have to, you know, that we can't if we don't want to. But if we don't keep in touch with the essence, we won't get anywhere and dissatisfaction will come. And that essence will give us a taste that's so sweet that it will make pale everything else. So keep in touch always with the essence. And there is no bar to that. Regardless of who we are, what our gender is, what our birth is, what our intelligence is, how many legs or arms or eyes we have. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference. Just chant Hare Krishna. Hear Bhagavatam, speak Bhagavatam, preach whatever we actually have realized. The essence, keep it simple. The other things, the society has to become organized, and it will gradually. And it is in its own way. But if we lose the essence, we've lost everything. Because then we just have a shell. And who's satisfied with the shell? No one. Because that's material life is a shell. The promise, but no delivery. The advertisement, but no delivery. No heart, no essence, no substance. That's the word, no substance. So we need the substance to satisfy us. And what is the substance? That's Krishna. That's the meaning of the first verse of the Bhagavatam, that He is the substance. Janma yasyata param satyam dhimahi. the absolute truth, the substance. We need to be in touch with the substance. We can take the help of so many other things that help us, that support us. But they support us so we can be in touch with the substance. So with support or without support, if we're in one situation, we may have lots of support. If we're in another situation, we have very little support. But the essence is still the essence. And we have to keep in touch with that. And if we can keep in touch with it continuously, constantly, and unmotivatedly, somehow or another, that is pure devotional service. Either by chanting, by hearing, by remembering, either one or all, then we've really achieved something. We can go slowly, we can take whatever culture surrounds us, and or whatever circumstances we're in, grihe tako vani tako, sara hari bolo, dako, call out. Whether we're in the householder, whether it's forest, where we're living, and whether we're sugi duki bolo nako vadane harinam korore. So whether we're, whatever our ashram is, whatever our vana is, whether we're happy, whether we're unhappy, whether we're rich or poor, healthy, unhealthy, harinam, take shelter. Radha Madhava, call out Krishna's names, always. That's the essence. And therefore, Mahaprabhu taught Harinam, 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 Eva Kebalam, Kalo Anasteva, Anasteva Gati Anyata. And to keep the essence in perspective, we have to associate with devotees who are serious. So therefore, because generally speaking, we're all little bit of this, a little bit of that. Yeah, Krishna consciousness is so nice. But we also have purva sanskaras to worry about, previous impressions, many of us, that are not very wholesome. So surround ourselves with good association, or if we don't have that association, know that our position is more precarious and therefore take more shelter. Be more afraid of Maya and call out all. And if we're not, we'll get weaker. And if we can take shelter of the essence, by Krishna's grace, we'll have strength. I don't know how much of that had to do with what you asked, but it also had to do with what I was thinking about earlier today. I was thinking that how to keep making advancement? How is it? Why is it that devotees, after so long, leave? Devotees who have served so sincerely, tried so hard, gave everything, and why did they leave? I was thinking about that all morning. Why? Why? What's wrong? What do we need to do more of? So here's the answer. We need this medicine to keep us strong, to make us strong, to help us ensure that we don't have a relapse. We need the medicine of Krishna Katha, Krishna Nam, Krishna Dham, Krishna in the form of the deities, and Krishna in the form of the devotees. That we certainly need, but it's not mentioned as one of the five main angas of devotional service by Srila Rupa Goswami. These five, he mentions, that even a little attachment will bring great results. What are the five? First one, mentioned by verses, Saru Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavata Shravan. Saru Sangha is mentioned first. Why? Because If you have that, the rest will be there. Actually associate with sadhus who really have that taste, who live in sat. Satsang. We're in touch with the truth, with eternity, the eternal truth, param satyam. Then namakirtan, chanting Krishna's names. Then bhagavata shravan, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Then maturavas, living in a holy place. And Sri Murtaya Shraddhadanaya Sevaya, to worship the deity with great faith. Because if we have full faith in the deity and the devotees and the Bhagavat, here it is specially mentioned, the deities, then our heart, the channel between us and these pure entities, this pure Krishna, is open. The channel is open, and the channel is based on Shraddha. So tomorrow we hear, if Krishna allows, the remaining prayers of Sri Sukadeva Goswami before he's beginning to speak. And then, if Krishna allows, the remaining 2 days of the week, we'll hear up to text 21 of the fifth chapter, that's well into the answering of the questions about the creation. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakti.